Chapter 20. The Necklace. When we got home from the rodeo, J.J. McCracken was asleep on the living room couch again. He must have been worn out after his brush with death that day, because he slept right through our entrance. He was wrapped in a bison hide blanket, snoring loud enough to rattle the chandelier. This time, he had decided to wear pajamas to bed, just in case. "Think he and Candace had another fight?" Heidi asked.
"We'll ask him in the morning."
Sidney locked the front door with the deadbolt, then assured us,
"Sasquatch won't get through that, I promise you."
The Krautheimers hurried upstairs for bed. The whole family had been acting uneasy around us all evening, obviously embarrassed about the bear baiting and worried about what JJ would say when he found out. The rest of us headed toward the guest bedrooms. It had been a very long day, and that night had ultimately been frustrating as well. I had been unable to get anyone at the rodeo to believe that Taffy Spooner might have let grievous bodily harm out of his chute. In fact, I had a hard time even getting anyone to listen to me, besides my own parents, and no one would listen to them either. Despite the bull's escape, the rodeo staff was determined to get the show back on as quickly as possible. The announcer downplayed the events, saying there had been a slight mishap in the handling area and that all fans should stay in their seats. The cowboys in charge of the animals acted like nothing serious had happened and went right back to loading bulls into the chutes. Grievous bodily harm, exhausted from his rampage, was wrangled and placed back in his pen with relative ease. After only 15 minutes, the rodeo was up and running again. Even the local police wouldn't take my parents and me seriously. There were quite a few of them on duty at the rodeo. The sheriff was even one of the clowns. They refused to entertain the idea that Taffy Spooner might have tried to harm me, insisting that Taffy and Ike were good people and big sponsors of the rodeo. Instead, they and everyone on the rodeo staff were operating under the idea that grievous bodily harm had escaped by accident. It turned out that mishaps were rather common at the rodeo, especially ones where animals escaped, although the animals in question had always been smaller, usually calves from the calf roping competition. They had never had a bull escape before, and it seemed that everyone wanted to sweep the incident under the rug and pretend that it hadn't happened. When we kept pressing him, the sheriff firmly told us to stop trying to do his job and go watch the rest of the rodeo. He was obviously quite annoyed at us when he said it, although it was still kind of hard to take him seriously, since he was wearing an enormous clown nose at the time. My parents and I reluctantly returned to our seats and tried to enjoy the remaining events. I couldn't concentrate, though. I kept searching the stands for the Spooners, who shouldn't have been hard to find with Taffy's distinctively colored cowboy hat. But I never saw them again. They must have left. However, I did see the other people I knew. Jasmine had joined her parents in the stands for the bull riding competition, and they all appeared just as eager for the show to go on as the police had been. Zach had shown up as well. He seemed completely unaffected by his ordeal that day and was surrounded by friends, many of whom had competed in the rodeo. Everyone was riveted to him as he spoke. I assumed he was telling the story of his adventure in the mine. Three young women were blatantly vying for his attention, batting their eyelashes and hanging on his every word. But Zach didn't seem to care. He kept stealing glances at Jasmine instead. Given the events of the day, my parents and I would have been fine with leaving the rodeo early, but everyone we had come with wanted to stay until the end. For the Krautheimers, it was a social event. Ray and Karina were enjoying themselves, and Melissa was a minor celebrity. Kids lined up to get their picture taken with her and have her sign their programs. So it was almost 10:30 by the time we got back to the house. Seeing as we had all been up since 4 in the morning, we were exhausted. The door had been replaced on the McCracken's room, the hinges screwed back into the jamb. A light shone underneath it, indicating someone was awake on the other side. "I want to say goodnight to Summer," I told my parents. "Don't be long," Mom said. "You need your sleep, and I'm sure Summer does too." She and Dad slipped into our room. Ray and Karina continued down the hall to their rooms. As they did, something occurred to me. Since Karina's room shared a wall with the McCrackens, then the loud noise she had heard in the house at 3:10 a.m. might have come from the McCrackens' room. I knocked softly on the McCrackens' door. "Hello?" Candace replied softly. "It's Teddy," I said. "Can I come in?"
"Of course."
I entered the room. Candace was sitting in bed, wrapped in a large robe. She had a book in her lap, but her eyes were red and swollen, as though she'd been crying. Summer was asleep on the sofa bed.
"Oh,"
I said, feeling embarrassed. "I just wanted to say goodnight to Summer. I didn't mean to disturb you."
"You're not,"
Candace said in a way that indicated she wasn't just being polite. I got the sense that she wanted to talk.
"I was having trouble sleeping again. You'd think it'd be easier without JJ here. The man snores like a freight train."
"Is that why he's on the couch tonight?" I asked.
"No, that was Summer's doing. He really upset her."
"How?"
"When he got back from the mine with Zach and Auron, she noticed that they only had shotguns with them."
"Not dart guns?"
"No."
"Oh." I immediately understood why Summer was angry. No dart guns meant that JJ and the others hadn't planned to sedate Sasquatch if they found him. Their only plan had been to kill him.
"JJ tried to explain it to her," Candace said. "If they ran into Sasquatch inside the mine, their lives would be in serious danger. A dart gun wouldn't do them any good. They'd be in a confined space, and the dart would take too long to work. So they'd have to shoot to kill. But that just upset Summer even more. She told JJ that if he was so worried for his safety, then he shouldn't have been going after the bear in the mine in the first place, and that no bear was worth killing just for a necklace, especially when there was a good chance the bear didn't eat the necklace at all." Candace gave me a searching look, as though she was hoping for my thoughts on this.
"She has a good point."
"I understand JJ asked you to investigate that possibility."
"Yes."
"And?"
"I don't have much," I admitted sadly. "I can't even figure out how anyone could have stolen your necklace, let alone who." I took in the room again as I said this. There was no place for anyone to hide, besides under the master bed, and Summer and I had found that area was full of boxes of winter blankets, which were stored there over the summer. Someone had removed the stuffed pronghorn that had caught fire. It had been replaced by a stuffed bighorn sheep from some other part of the house, as though no bedroom would be complete without some dead local wildlife. I looked back at the door. While it had been put back in place, the latch to lock it hadn't, because the place where it had ripped free from the jam was too damaged. Candace was obviously upset with my lack of information. She tried to keep herself composed, but then broke into tears, which she immediately grew embarrassed about.
"Sorry, I know you're just a kid, but you've solved so many other crimes. I was hoping, I thought that you'd maybe... Oh, I've made such a mess of things. I felt it'd be a special surprise for JJ, wearing the necklace for him here. But it's only led to one disaster after another."
Her choice of words struck me.
"Why did you think it would be special?"
Candace blew her nose in a tissue and tried to compose herself.
"Because this is where JJ proposed to me."
"I didn't know that."
"Yes,"
Candace smiled, thinking back, pleased by the memory.
"It was 16 years ago this summer. We came to visit the Krautheimers. It was my first time here. JJ has always loved this place, and he wanted me to see it. Originally, he was planning to propose to me a few weeks later in New York City. He was going to buy a diamond from a merchant there, and he thought he would pop the question afterward, but then he ended up buying that sapphire instead. It kind of fell into his lap and he couldn't resist. So he bought it and proposed that night instead. We went on a moonlight horseback ride to a meadow where Heidi had arranged to have a blanket and some champagne set up for us. I know it might seem hard to believe, but JJ can be a very romantic person.
That did seem hard to believe. But there was another part of the story that was much more interesting to me. What do you mean the sapphire kind of fell into his lap?
Oh, he was at a bar in town with Sydney, and some local kid came in with the sapphire, looking to sell it. He'd found it out on one of the reservations in the area. It didn't look like much at the time. It was just a big, ugly lump of rock. But JJ realized that the right jeweler could turn it into something beautiful. So he bought it off the kid and gave it to me that night. I have to admit, I wasn't thrilled that JJ was just giving me a rock instead of a ring. But as usual, JJ's instincts were spot on. In fact, the sapphire turned out to be worth far more than even JJ suspected. He likes to say it's the best investment he ever made. Not because of the money, though, Summer said, surprising us. She was still lying in the sofa bed, but had apparently been awake and listening. Because you agreed to marry him. How long have you been eavesdropping on us? Candace asked. It sounded stern, but she was obviously teasing. She looked much happier than she had when I had first come into the room. It doesn't count as eavesdropping when people are talking right in front of you. How was I supposed to sleep through all that?
Sorry, I said. We were trying to be quiet.
Teddy came in to say goodnight to you, Candace explained, and I made him stay and listen to my boring engagement story.
It wasn't boring at all, I told her.
Candace said, I think I've talked enough. It's way too late for you kids to be up. We'll see you in the morning, Teddy.
All right, I said. Good night, Summer. Sleep well.
You too. Is the front door locked tonight?
Yes. No bears are getting in, I hope.
Oh, Teddy, Candace said, would you mind putting this back on the bookshelf for me?
She tossed me the book she had been reading. It was a field guide to local wildlife.
It goes right by the door.
I turned to the shelves, which ran along the wall, only a few feet from the entrance to the room. Sure enough, there was an entire shelf full of field guides. I tucked the book back in place, then turned back to Candace, having one last question after her story.
Do you have any idea what JJ actually paid for that sapphire?
Not exactly, but JJ always said it was a fair price. More than the kid was even asking. Good night, Teddy.
Good night,
Summer echoed. I slipped out the door into the hallway. The moment I closed it behind me, the lights went out in the McCracken's room. Down the hall, in the living room, JJ was still snoring loudly. The lights appeared to be out in Pete and Ray's room, and Karina's room, too. Although the light shone under the door to my room, indicating that my parents were up, waiting for me to return.
Still, I stood in the hall for a moment, wanting to be alone, thinking.
I had the sense that I had missed something important, although I had no idea what it could be. It was a nagging feeling that I had been close to figuring out a piece to the mystery, but then let the solution slip away. I yawned. I was exhausted and my mind was fuzzy. That wasn't the best condition to be in to solve anything. I figured that I should go to bed, get a good night's sleep for once, and maybe, when I was nice and rested, I could calmly figure everything out in the morning. Only, the next morning wasn't calm at all.